Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
At the end of June, Dr. Fred Pestello retired from being the president of St. Louis University here, not right down the road from us, not too far away from where we are, downtown St. Louis. And we are joined today on the Chris and Amy show by the new president of St. Louis University, Dr. Edward Faser, who is with us now on KMOX. Dr. Faser, good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So it's been, what, a couple of months on the job? What's it about, I guess, a couple of months? How's it going?
It's terrific. We just welcomed 1,200 new students this week. We had a terrific convocation ceremony. We've welcomed our new faculty and staff, and we've gotten the semester started this morning. So, good start.
That's today exciting. Was the first day.
It's first day of class. Wow.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I have a ton of questions for you, and we were talking before we went on air. I got super excited because there's a National Parks connection. But I do want to note that your first day officially here at St. Louis University was June 1st, so 2 weeks after the tornado. So you're coming into St. Louis. Just what was that coming to this new city, but then also knowing, all right, they've been through a lot, and now I'm now heading up this university.
Yeah, so we did come in early June, and my wife and I moved into the university residence, and that was in a part of the city just across from Forest Park, which had been hit pretty hard, and our neighbors on one side of us lost 50 trees in their yard. Of course, the city, for a couple of things I noticed. First, I was really impressed as a city person, city planning background, mm-hmm. with the city's response and the cleanup effort. I know it was a lot of that, worst of that was out. It was wonderful to see how many people were stepping up to help neighborhoods. I think at SLU, this preceded me, but we had opened up Chaffetz to provide some support to the city. So it's gratifying to see the response. Obviously, a big challenge for St. Louis going forward.
Yeah.
So just your first weeks on the job, and there was the transition from Fred Pestello to you. What is that transition like? What happens in that period of time?
Yeah, well, it's been very smooth. Fred has been terrific to work with. A lot of it relates to getting up to speed on the university's budget, on ways in which we're responding to the current national landscape, the research challenges, research funding challenges federally, and so forth. A lot of it is just meeting our new our trustees, meeting many of our faculty and staff, and those kinds of things.
So let's talk about the federal funding challenge. And there are a lot of organizations around the country that just, things are up in the air, and universities, it's no different. So how challenging is it now? What's the scale of the challenge for SLU?
For SLU, it's all relative. So we are, we have just become an R1 university, one of 52 private university at the R1 level, which is the highest level of research intensity. So it is not immaterial to have a reduction in your federal funding or to have some of your grants pulled back, paused, challenged. And we have had a little bit of that. It has been manageable at this point. We're hopeful that going forward, the federal government will resolve particularly how it funds the overall cost of research. There's some promising signs there. But if the trend continues a pullback in federal research, it will be something we have to adjust to like any other institution.
So how would you adjust? What would you do? I mean, if you don't get this money back.
Well, we have to think about rebalancing teaching and research. SLU is a very strong teaching institution and research. It's really over the last decade or so that our funded research trajectory has increased substantially, such that we eventually were named an R1 just this last year. So for us, that's a little bit easier adjustment than it would be for a very large public research institution or for WashU. But it will mean, I think, for every institution, just stepping back from SLU across higher education, rebalancing the level of activity between research and teaching. There's really no alternative for that because you cannot replace the scale of the federal investment in research mm-hmm. with philanthropy or corporate sources or other sources of funding.
And just mentioning the R1, there are only, is it 52?
Yes.
Private universities that are R1 schools.
Correct.
So rather prestigious for St. Louis University.
Yeah, relatively rare. At that top of the, you know, you have a couple of thousand four-year institutions of higher education. So at that top scale, it is a relatively small number, both for public and private, mm-hmm. and doing research at that level of intensity.
With this upcoming school year, obviously being your first, but what are you most excited for, both for you and for the university?
We are getting ready to launch a new effort to define the next strategy for SLU. We last did our strategic plan for the institution about 10 years ago, and of course the national higher education landscape has changed a lot. SLU's, some of the things that really drew me to SLU were the degree to which the institution is tied into St. Louis and the region. I think that's really important for our students as a teaching laboratory, if you will, and for us as a citizen of St. Louis. I expect a lot of focus on that going forward. Our students are terrific. We do a lot of what and how mm-hmm. at the university, of course, teaching students in the domains, disciplines, and areas that they'd wish to pursue their career. But we spend a lot of time on why at a Jesuit institution like SLU. And that's core to our mission. We'll spend a lot of time thinking about how we advance that Jesuit mission in this next 5 to 10 years of a very rapidly changing higher education landscape.
How is enrollment now compared to what it was in years previous?
We're down a little bit this fall.
Within context of other universities around the country?
Probably
or region?
Fairly common, certainly in the Midwest. Yes.
Okay.
Both the Midwest and the Northeast are demographically, we're all adjusting to the demographic change and the reduction in the number of high school students going to college. And that's hit our region harder, relatively speaking, than, say, the Southwest or the West, most of the Western states. Although even where I previously was, Oregon, we were starting to see that kind of demographic shift. What we have to all of us do, I think, in higher education is recognize that there is a more diverse set of students out there of all walks of life who need access to higher education of various kinds, and we need to adjust to that. That's an appropriate response to the situation we're in.
So, like you said, that a little bit of a drop in enrollment, so you could say the volume is down a bit, but the diversity is up. More students from all over.
All over.
Yeah.
Still seeing very strong demand at SLU for students from all over the world. And that's one of our enrollment challenges as well, is it was difficult for students to get visas this year, and that has also that's impacted us. We are among the most international universities in the country. If you look at the ratio of international students to total students at SLU, we have a campus in Madrid. We've had that campus there since the 1960s. Mm-hmm. So there's a deep tradition of international education at SLU. And in this moment of challenged international enrollment and the ability for students to gain visas, that's been tough for us.
And any signs of relief on that front at all? Or does this look like it's going to be a challenge for a while?
Visas have started to open up. I think we have a larger national conversation to have about the role of immigration and its benefits to the U.S. economy. And that conversation will hopefully happen.
This is going to sound like a dumb question, so I apologize, and you probably don't, there's no way to quantify this yet, but there's moments that can like change the trajectory of something. When Oprah ran a marathon, she single-handedly did more for running and marathoning than anyone who came before her. Do you think we have an American Pope, a Pope that went to Villanova? Is there going to be like a Catholic university bump? Is there more interest, or do you think that's something? I mean, obviously you can't quantify it yet because it's so new, but is that even silly to think of that, or do you think it could have an impact?
I don't think it's silly. I think, you know, come back to the question of why mm-hmm. this is a generation of students who are looking for greater meaning in their lives. That's what I've observed. Over the course of my career, so I went to Jesuit University at the University of San Francisco, and then my entire career was at UNC Chapel Hill and University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, University of Manchester in England, and Oregon State in the West. And all of them, large public research, secular institutions. What I observed in our students, even in those schools, was a increased thirst for why, what their why was going to be in their lives. You get this in spades in a Jesuit university like SLU. And I would be, I am hopeful that in fact there is likely to be an increase in demand for students, whatever their faith background. They may be Muslim or Jewish or Catholic or Presbyterian or anything, or no faith at all. What they'll find at an institution like SLU, a Catholic Jesuit institution, is a lot of conversation about purpose and what they're going to do with their lives in service to others, with and in service to others. I think that's of appeal to this generation more so than I saw early in my career.
SLU President Dr. Edward Faser is with us here on KMOX. We have a message from a listener who says, I am a 99 alum of SLU. Get us a tournament bid this year, please. Now, and this leads me to this. Yeah, we talk to Athletic Director Chris May quite frequently on this show, and we know that sports is a huge way to market your university. So having some successful sports programs does that, especially programs like men's basketball, draws a lot of attention to your university. What is your level of commitment on that and helping the athletic department along?
Yeah, I appreciate the advice. When I came to SLU,
it's the listener. It's a 99 alum.
I will listen to the advice from any alum. So keep them coming. I told Chris May when I came to SLU, our athletic director, that all he had to do in my first year was go undefeated. And then subsequent years, we can see what happens. Athletics are critically important. We have Division I athletics at SLU at a high level with student athletes who will impress you every day with their level of discipline. I will just cite our women's softball team that won the A-10 championship and is also delivered the highest GPA in the country.
Wow, that's
that
awesome.
Is that's instructive awesome. Of how we try to approach academics and athletics at SLU. When I've been at Chapel Hill or Illinois or Oregon State, big athletic programs at those schools, when you have excellence in athletics coupled with excellence in academics, it builds a level of school spirit and a level of public engagement, alumni engagement, student engagement that powers the university in pretty extraordinary ways. So that will be a priority for me.
Yeah, I mean, you just mentioned it. You were at three universities where that is, sports is huge at those schools.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. So very good.
I love it. Well, I mean, we've talked about it before, but the O'Loughlin Family Champion Center is so impressive on the SLU campus. A lot of my friends, I'm 42, so that age group, a lot of my friends who went to SLU, like, oh my gosh, look at the campus now. It's so fancy. It's pretty nice looking.
Yeah, we are very lucky to have good facilities. And that center just, it provides the right space to give the support for our student athletes that they need.
Dr. Edward Faser, the new president of St. Louis University, thank you for coming in, talking with us, and best of luck in moving the university forward.
Thanks so much for having me.
That is Dr. Edward Faser, again, president of SLU, with us here on the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
I had to play the clean version, so it might be a little delayed.
Wait, come on. Come on, let me hear it. Come on. Thank you. My God, that was going to be so unsatisfying if I didn't hear it. Amy usually comes into the office every day, and the first thing she says is, cash rules everything around me. first thing out of her mouth.
Listen, that's inside baseball. You're not supposed to share.
Dollar bills, y'all. Yeah. That's what she says every day.
I know. It's not working. I am short.
We got a text message about people are just beating up on St. Charles now.
Well, they might be from St. Charles.
St. Charles came out and, you know, they did a thing. They banded together as a community and they said hell no to the data center.
Yeah, I mean, the people spoke and they didn't mince words.
And then somehow it became a thing that everybody in St. Charles is related to each other.
Well,
was it because of the...
Because the mayor, apparently the land owners who were selling the property to the data center are related to Mayor Dan Borgmeyer. And one of the residents of St. Charles said, oh, we should make a family tree for the mayor. He doesn't know his relatives. And Mayor Borgmeyer said, listen, it's like a second or third cousin that I don't know. We're all related to people. I'm related to Steve Ellman. And so then,
really?
Then we thought we buried the lead. Damn, is everyone really related to everyone in St. Charles?
Text message says, St. Charles resident introducing their cousins. This is my third cousin today. Come on, man. We're not here to bury St. Charles today. That's not the point of the show.
We
love St. Charles.
I wish the people around my house had kept that cell phone tower out of the parking lot. At any rate, those things are abominations. That's why I felt the words of the guy that said, you can take your abomination. It has no place here.
We're going to give away tickets for the Blues opener against the Minnesota Wild October 9th. And not right now.
Don't call.
Yeah, because I know what you're doing. It's time to call. No, it's not time to call. You got to be listening for your chance to win. You have to be listening for your chance to win those tickets. And we will cue you when it is time to do so. We've got a pair of tickets to give away for that game. First home game for the Blues this year. And we'll have tickets for tomorrow and Friday as well.
I'm excited about that. Home opener, season opener for the Blues because things didn't end the way we wanted them to.
That was, you know,
it was
what?
A rough game 7, 1 second left. They tie the game. Woof.
I had said, Amy, I had said that for a long time after they won the Stanley Cup that I'm just like, I don't know what it is, but it was so satisfying that they won. I was like, I'm good. I don't care about anything anymore. Like I don't care if they go 0-82. It's like it doesn't matter because they finally won that cup.
Yeah.
And last season was the first time I felt reinvested. And my God, that game 7.
You know, I do feel like. Whoa! I've never seen you so worked up.
That's what I mean. It was irritating.
Yeah,
just
it was irritating.
Really irritating.
But it was so fun to have that fire lit again, because I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Winning the cup pre-COVID
was exhausting.
Well, it was exhausting. But also winning the cup pre-COVID feels like a bazillion years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if it's kind of like the BC-AD thing, like before COVID, after COVID. Mm-hmm, it feels like a different time.
Yeah.
Totally
it
different
really
time.
It really does. That parade feels like an eternity ago.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
We have our question of the week. You need to be following us on Twitter. At Chris Amy KMOX. And by the way, if you are on Twitter, you can find the link for the show if you want to watch on Twitter. It's there. Facebook and YouTube as well. But on our Twitter account, pinned at the top, mm-hmm. is this week's question of the week. And it is, will you let your kid use AI/ChatGPT for homework? Kids are back in school. This week was, you know, really the week everybody mm-hmm. got back to school. And we just found out SLU got back to school today.
I know.
On a Wednesday.
Well, because you got to have your orientation.
Yeah, you know, all
get
that
used
stuff.
To what's going on.
So go ahead and vote. There's one day left to do. It'll be tomorrow. And then we will have the results on Friday morning. But will you let your kid use AI/ChatGPT for homework? Because it's become really prominent. And it feels like in a lot of cases, kids are just using it to do everything, right? So, because it's not like Googling. It's like hyper Googling. And in a lot of cases, you can have entire assignments, writing assignments done by ChatGPT or artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, teachers and professors are having a difficult time sorting through all of that. And there's a learning aspect to it, because you're not really learning if you're using this technology.
Yeah, it's like exercising your brain, not only to figure out a math problem, even if you won't use that specific math formula down the road.
Yeah.
It's also it's self-discipline. It's perseverance. It's persistence. It's being able to problem solve, to struggle, to do something that you don't feel like doing. And the same thing with essays, with writing. I hate writing. And I'm a writer. I don't like it. I don't like the process. It's painful. It's awful. I feel like I have nothing to say. That is one thing. There are some writers who will say, like, if I don't write, I may as well not breathe. I have to write every day. I don't feel that way. I have nothing to say, which is amazing because I'm on the air every day. But I don't have anything to say when I sit down and write. I feel like the well is empty, and it's always been a painful experience for me, but it's working through that.
That's the thing.
There's a skill.
It's hard, and it's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to feel impossible sometimes, you know? You learn a lot from that.
It's like being friends with you feels impossible, but it's made me a worse person. Honestly, I don't know what I'm getting out of this.
That's just not really true at all. Mm. You are so much better than when I met you like 5 years ago. Mm. 6 years ago. Seven.
Seven?
You were a mess back then.
I think it's been 8 years.
8 years?
Oh, my gosh.
Good Lord.
I'm depressed now.
Yeah. It's not. Things aren't getting better.
Hey, we're talking to John Rooney, though.
Oh, yeah. John Rooney. We'll talk some Cardinals baseball next with John. How about that? 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Now, the John Rooney Conversation on KMOX, sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and if you're a Missourian, we're for you.
The two outs in the bottom of the ninth, the 1-0 pitch. Acosta hits a ground ball to short. Wynn throws to second for a Redbird winner. Heriberto Hernandez is out 6-4 coming down to second base, and this ball game has come to an end with the Cardinals winning 7-4.
There you go. Cardinals have taken the first two games of the series in Miami. They will finish that up tonight. It's a 4:45 pregame show, then a 5:40 first pitch, and guess where you can hear it? Right here on 104.1 FM KMOX and the Odyssey app as well. Time to go to the guest line. We got the voice of the Cardinals, John Rooney, who is with us today from Miami. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Oh, man, we're having a great time. Mm-hmm. Cardinals won the last couple of games. Good to see them win, and take care of business against this Marlins team, John.
Well, you're never as bad as you look when you're in a losing streak. And sometimes on a great winning streak like the Brewers went on recently as they won 14 straight, but they dropped a doubleheader to the Cubs yesterday. You're never probably as good as you look completely when you're in that kind of run. But to win a couple of games here and take the edge off, a lot more smiles in the clubhouse, but the dedication and the work is still there. That has been a constant the whole year, even though it has been an up-and-down ride. But it is an up-and-down ride even for the championship teams. But I do see some good things going on. Matt Swanson continues to just amaze me the way he is durable. He pitched on Monday, came back last night, and did a terrific job in his inning. And JoJo Romero looked pretty sharp in the game last night. And granted, Miami's not hitting all that well, but that's a team that when they were winning, and they had a stretch where they were winning and got back to .500 at one point, they were scoring and doing damage late in ball games. But they were limited, and the Cardinals were able to hold on and win that last night, even though Miami made a comeback a couple of times. So that was fun to watch.
Yeah, you know, we talked yesterday to Oliver Marmol on the Gas House Gang. He's with us every Tuesday. And, you know, we were talking about different players. And Mason Wynn has been really impressive, I mean, not just defensively, but he has been spectacular defensively this season. And I would say he's the best or been the best shortstop in all of baseball this year, at least defensively. And, you know, he got a couple of steals last night. So as you've watched him play and continue to grow this season, what are your thoughts?
I thought he should have been the Gold Glove winner last year. and he should win one this year. That's for certain. If he gets his hand on the ball, if he gets that exchange out of the glove, I don't care where he's throwing, to second for a force out or if he's throwing to first for an out, that's what's going to happen. Doesn't make many mistakes at all. He was charged with a tough bad hop error, which would have been his third error of the season, but they overturned that later to a bad hop base hit, which I thought was the right call because he was in front of a ground ball. The ball either hit a spike mark or, as Ricky pointed out, coming off that artificial turf may have picked up speed and then took a funny bounce off the dirt when just before the ball got to him. He was quick enough, though, to get a glove on it, but he just couldn't get the ball to make a throw after that. But I'm glad they took that error away because that would have been a rough one. But, you know, considering as late as we are in the season, as many games and innings as he has played at shortstop, to have that kind of thing going for him at his range, it's to a lot of balls a lot of shortstops won't get to. And he's making all those plays, and so far just a couple of errors. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, just staying on win for another second here. He also in the offseason said that he was working on his speed, wanted to make base stealing a bigger part of his game, and it was fun to see that last night.
Yes, it was his first multi-steal game. And as he said after the game, it really, you know, helped his confidence that the things he's working on can implement in the game now. But these coaches do such a good job. They get tells on the other pitchers. The scouting report last night on Cabrera was really, really good. And I thought it was on Perez the night before, where the Cardinals had been in double digits in hits and very limited extra base hits. I think they had one double last night from Burleson and the home run from Gorman the night before. But that's all in the planning and getting tells on pitchers, getting them to the players recognizing them, picking up on them, helping the running game. I think Mason's working that into his game as well, and it was good to see him take off with his speed, and he's becoming an even better base runner as he moves along in his major league career. We are seeing a star making great strides in St. Louis. And he truly is a gold glover, but he has speed and his offense. He just brings a really good package to the park when he shows up.
You know, the season is, you know, we're getting closer and closer to the end here, which is never really my favorite time of the baseball season when it doesn't. I mean, maybe they could make a run here and we will see. Hopefully they do something like that. But when you have this much time to go, provided the regular season will be the end of this season, what is it for you that you look to the most or that you are interested in seeing the most? Is it the young players to see how they grow, to look ahead to next year, to see what roles they might have with the team? How do you look at it?
I look at it like, let's win the game today. That's how I look at it. I want them to play well today and take care of business today, and then we'll worry about tomorrow and then kind of evaluate all the other stuff you talked about when the season's over. That's what I look forward to. I want to see how the game preparation and how the lineup sets up, how the pitcher prepares, how the pitcher implements the game plan, and how they work together. And they've done a really good job of that the last couple of nights. Matthew Liberatore made some adjustments and got through five innings. And he had a dunker of a double that chased him from the game, but that was the time to go get him. But there was progress there. We can evaluate that progress because the Cardinals were able to win that game. The bullpen got the win. Libby didn't, but he looked much better, and his velocity held up much better through five innings. And then we'll see what happens tonight with Andre Pallante. The last time out, Pallante against the Marlins, one hit them for seven innings and didn't give up any runs. And I'd love to see him build off of that and have a really good, strong finish. But let's take care of the game today. That's what I look forward to. And you get really excited if you're in the mix and going for a playoff run. But if the Cardinals can't have that playoff run, they can certainly determine who gets in and where they go once the playoffs start with a really good finish. And over the long haul, yes, I hope they just give everybody a finish and then prepare themselves to go to spring training in 26 down in Jupiter.
John, as you know, it's National Radio Day, and so much history here at KMOX and so much history in your career. Any reflections for you and your career on National Radio Day?
Well, how about that? 100 years of KMOX.
Yeah.
That's pretty big. And I remember the 60th anniversary of KMOX. I was on staff there, even though I was on staff for 6 months one year and 6 months another before moving on to play-by-play jobs and on to CBS in New York. But I remember Robert Hyland getting us all together for the celebration of the 60th anniversary. I think I told you this. I've got a clock radio, Sony clock radio that Mr. Hyland gave the employees with a nice little sign on top, a plaque of 60 years of KMOX. And I still have that somewhere. But that was something I look forward to as I started my career in 1971 outside of Kansas City. And I was just a junior in high school when I got started. But I was talking with Ben Boyd today, Denny Matthews, Bud Blattner. Of course, Bud did the St. Louis Hawks, but he was the first Kansas City Royals announcer. And they used to let me sit in the booth with them when I was a junior in high school and observe what was going on. And then later getting to know Jack Buck and Mike Cannon, Bob Starr, and the people at KMOX Radio. And then to get to work with them was just, you know, super important to my life and my career, even though I wasn't ready for KMOX the first time I was there. When I came back in 84, I was ready and then moved on to a network assignment and started working major league teams after that. But I had a chance to work in radio and how important radio is to each community, no matter how small or how big. It's still big today, even with the internet and with streaming and one thing and another. The local stations in the small towns give people the information on who's in the hospital and who is doing what in the community and the good things that are going on, broadcasting sporting events in those communities and getting that local news out there. And then whether it be music, talk, or entertainment, that's all very important. And we have a really good Missouri Broadcasters Association that works with all of their members to enhance what's going on and work with legislation to keep radio strong. And I know KMOX is a major part of that organization and has been for forever. But the radio, it's important. No matter how big or how small the community, it just ties the community together. And Cardinal baseball ties a big community together with a network that's in like eight states and covers about 160 some stations. And it's just a pleasure and honor, and I hold that dear as well to be a part of that.
And it is awesome that we are continuing that relationship for the foreseeable future. We announced that extension with the Cardinals, just a couple of months ago. And so we know that beyond this season and through next season, and like I said, for the foreseeable future, the Cardinals and KMOX will continue to be partners.
Well, I remember sitting in the car outside of you know, the house outside of Kansas City in Richmond, Missouri. We couldn't quite, bring KMOX in on the home radio, but it came in on the car. We'd sit out there and listen to Cardinal games. And that was back in 1963 and 64 when I first really became interested in baseball. And what a year to be interested in Cardinal baseball in 64 with Mike Shannon and Bill White and Lou Brock and Bob Gibson and Bob Uecker catching fly balls with his tuba before a World Series game against the Yankees. But what a team to follow.
Yeah.
And interesting enough, on the radio side, that was kind of the all-broadcast team because McCarver and Uecker became broadcasters. Bill White broadcast the Yankees and CBS Radio. I got to work with Bill. And then we had Dick Grote doing college basketball. He was a leading scorer for Duke when he was in college. With the Duke basketball team. He did basketball in Pittsburgh for many, many years. And they had Lou Brock doing some broadcasting and Bob Gibson and of course, Mike Shannon, the voice of the Cardinals. And many, many years after his playing career ended because of illness, he was able to go on and have a massive career in broadcasting in St. Louis and with the Cardinal Radio Network. To me, that was the all-broadcast team.
All right, John Rooney, we'll be listening to the broadcast team tonight. The 4:45 pregame, 5:40 first pitch from Miami. It'll be the Cardinals finishing up this series before heading to Tampa. We appreciate you as always. Thank you, John.
All right. Have a great National Radio Day on KMOX.
Now, I need you to find that clock radio for me, too. I asked you last time, so see if you can locate
works.
It. Yeah.
I love a clock radio.
I would like to have it, is what I'm saying.
What?
Yeah.
Well, we'll negotiate.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk about it.
Empty price on that.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Baseball tonight, again, 5:40 is the first pitch. John Rooney will have that. And you should be listening in to 104.1 FM KMOX.
Well, we've talked about Red Cross blood drives before and the importance of them, the need for blood in our area. And joining us now to discuss an upcoming blood drive, it's actually tomorrow, is Sharon Watson, Regional Communications Director with the American Red Cross. KMOX is partnering with the Red Cross for a blood drive tomorrow. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this is kind of cool because, of course, anytime you donate blood, it's something admirable and needed. But as part of a new initiative, the Red Cross is offering donors a chance to improve their own health by screening their blood for A1C. Is this something that hasn't been done before?
We actually have done it one other time. We did it several months ago in the spring and are trying it out again. We had such a positive response to it where a lot of people found it to be very helpful to be able to get that A1C result and find out where they're, where they stand when it comes to pre-diabetes or diabetes. And sometimes that's not something you find out until you get to that annual visit at your doctor. And if you've missed one of those recently, you might have a different situation than what has happened in the past. And so that's really helpful information to be able to get when you go provide blood. And you're also, of course, giving that gift of life and helping other people to be able to come through a difficult circumstance, or whether that's a surgery or an emergency situation, or they have to have those routine blood transfusions for sickle cell disease or other chronic things such as cancer.
Now, with the A1C, as you mentioned, it's an indicator of diabetes. You may not know unless you go on your annual exam. How do the results work? Is it they send you an email later, or is it like a COVID test where they're like, oh my gosh, you've got it?
No, you will learn later. You're right. Just something where it would be great if we could get those instant results, but it does come from testing the blood. And so when you go in to give the blood, you would get that information to you later in the email. We recommend that you go through the app, that you sign up through the blood drive app. And that's through Android or Apple phones. And that way you can have all of that health information in there when you go in and donate blood anytime. So it'll provide you the history of your blood pressure and other things that get checked when you go in, and with the blood test and hemoglobin and other things. So that's really helpful to have that information as well. And then this is just an added bonus of getting some additional insight. And this is just going through the month of August. And if you did it in the earlier part of the year, then you wouldn't get those results again, because it hasn't been that far back since the first time we did it. But this time, if you go in anytime between now through August 28th, then we really hope you'll come to the KMOX drive on August 21st, tomorrow from 2 to 7.
Yeah, redcrossblood.org, and the sponsor code is KMOX, and you can find all the information you need to tomorrow from 2 until 7 o'clock. And there are 7 locations in St. Louis, Washington, Belleville on the other side, Collinsville on the other side, O'Fallon, Missouri, Imperial, Baldwin, Missouri. So there's a spot near you where you can go for this. Just, before we say goodbye here, how great is the need for blood, and why you do these donation drives?
We do have a great need for blood now, and this is one of the reasons that we are doing this, this push now as we end up the latter part of summer. Of course, that's a very busy time for people, and a lot of times people haven't been able to keep up with their donations during the summer just due to that busy schedule. So we have a strong need right now for type O as well as B negative, but all types are needed, and we definitely would appreciate everybody coming out and taking the time to do it.
If let's say you go in, you don't know what kind of blood you have, what blood type, will you find out at a blood drive?
Yes, you would get that through your blood donor information through the app, as well as through your online account if you go through redcrossblood.org.
Awesome. Well, Sharon Watson, Regional Communications Director with the American Red Cross, we really appreciate your time this morning and hope a ton of people show up for the blood drive tomorrow from 2 to 7, a ton of locations that people can pick one near them.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Thank you. That is Sharon Watson. And again, as Ranj mentioned, multiple locations, Illinois, St. Louis, you can go find out more information.
RedCrossBlood.org. The sponsor code is KMOX. If you prefer a phone call, 800-RED-CROSS. Super, super easy.
Hey, coming up at 11 in just a few minutes, we're going to chat with Michael Calhoun in celebration of National Radio Day.
Not National Cleavage Day.
Well, that's a... We might celebrate that later.
Great.
Okay.
You can celebrate every day.
We just don't know which kind of cleavage. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
anyway,
we still don't know.
It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.